Anyway, thank you. And hi, good morning, everyone. I'm sorry I rushed in here. A few hours ago, I was in Central America, and now I'm bringing back another environmental determinant of health, intestinal parasite. So I'm just kind of explode from the ears. You'll know what's happening and move away. Anyhow, with that image aside, I wanted to thank Cheryl and everybody for this and great lead. To understand some of the dynamics and talking about power and community organizing. I wanted to start with the presentation with kind of a more of a reflection after time to get to this point of beginning to think about what's going on, especially that, you know, I was coming in thinking about that Chinese curse that's always quoted about, you know, may you live in interesting times. I think that we live in very interesting times. And then there's times but with those interesting times come great opportunities. So I wanted to start with two quick stories. One is that when I started as a young community organizer a long, long time ago, I learned three very important lessons. One is that the power of community, the best and worst come out of people in community. That history can be understood, whether it be the family or the nation or the world, is about that drive to be together and how important it is. The second thing that I learned was the power of information. That at the time, that people often quoted Saul Alinsky, everybody has to be cool, so you have to get the Saul Alinsky quote. And it says that, you know, that power gravitates to two poles, people and money, but also information and knowledge, and that was real important. And the third lesson was that you need to know what side you're on, that you can't be in the middle. That in the middle means you can get shot or attacked or whatever appropriate way to say from both sides, that you get caught in the middle and you really aren't part of the change process. The second story was, I know this guy, he like had the most amazing networking gene. I mean, he just built into him. And every time I meet him, he says, what's new? And one day I said, really nothing. I began to think about it, like nothing's really new. We change names, the names are new, right? But those of us who have some history, we do long literature reviews, realized that really a lot of the same concepts coming back, and that became really interesting to me. Why do we keep on changing the name? And I realized that there's this glass ceiling that we hit of when things get tough, we hit that on the issues of community development, community power, capacity building. I could spend like 15 minutes just on all the different names we've had. Why do we keep on just bouncing back? And I realized that maybe the problem isn't in the name and the technique, but we're hitting something that we really don't really know what to do with. And in short, I realized that there are a lot of paradoxes that we face as we professionalize social change. And that's what I'm going to talk about. So there's absolutely no one who will have any financial interest in this. For those further date of you, is that if you remember Pogo, and there was something that came back, is that as Pogo goes through the forest, and the beauty of the forest primeval gets to my heart, and it gets me in the feet, porcupine, and as you can see all the garbage on there, it says, it's hard walking on this stuff. Yep, son, we have met the enemy, and he is us. Okay? An important lesson, though very old, it began to reflect as exactly, is everything really outside of us? Is it all about them and not us? So I wanted just to give you a warning where I'm going very quickly. I have a short time, so I'm going to make a lot of generalizations about complex stuff. I'm not suggesting I have the solutions to them, okay? I'm struggling with these issues myself, okay? I know this is my opinion, but I want you to remember I'm an optimist. I believe we can do something about it. Fair deal? Okay. So, here we go. Situation one. Several critical social factors are affecting the most at risk and unhealthy members of the community. Your agency or organization serves your organization is including discriminatory practices, unequal distribution of resources, and barriers to access to services. Okay, this is audience participation. You can organize the community, address the issues. How many agree with that one? Right? Okay, that's cool. Cheryl, can I have that? You can run a program to address the issues, right? Which one do we do most of the time? A? How many say A do most of the time? How many do B most of the time? Got the point. Okay. C, how many of us try to get our organizations to advocate and support those changes themselves? Okay, a few more of us. Okay? So really, we're working out there, but many of us, as we find, okay, don't often try to change our own organizational practice. How many try that one lately? Okay, good for you, because that's really it. Okay? So the paradox number one, and you know, paradoxes are these, you know, kind of contradictions in a way. Okay? And we try to promote social change and justice from risk-averse institutions. Okay? Really, how can we empower others if we're not really empowered ourselves? Why do we go out there? Because how many times have you heard somebody, a faculty member, a member of public health, to say, for the foundation grant, we can't do that, but here's some money to do it for us. Or, we can't do that, we're a public health organization, we're a university, stuff like that. But meanwhile, most of the problems where change comes is really in our own homes and real changes. So, do our organizations that where we work at really practice what we preach? In terms of government, nonprofits, afraid of losing a grant, contract, I'm in business. I gotta worry about this, you know? Higher education, your professors can tell you, you know, go out there and charge, but try to see if they can get anything done in their universities. Okay? So are we really expecting marginalized communities to make changes we can't even make ourselves? Okay? Situation two. You bring your child to a physician. Your child is facing a complex problem that will affect his or her health, ability to learn, economic future. The doctor asks you about your history, your culture, your strengths and challenges, and then says to you, I can't tell you what's right for your family. This is your child. You know better than me. Tell me how to address that problem. How many of you would stand for that? You can. Tell the doctor how to treat your child and do what you want. Go off, say thank you for listening to me. I'm going to do whatever I want. I'm going to go down to pick up whatever I want at the pharmacy, wherever. You can treat yourself without the advice of a physician. Or you can find a doctor who listens but tells you what he, she thinks is the best course of action based on the medical model. Okay? Now it's always funny when I use that as a litmus test in my work. What would I do for my child? Would I go to a doctor who told me, respected everything about me, but did not give me the advantage of his knowledge, or her knowledge? But often we find ourselves in that situation. We can't tell people about what to do. They know it's better. Not necessarily. And you wouldn't expect that. So the chance, would you take your child to a doctor who performs the way we do in public health? Okay? By expecting people to come up answers and not benefiting. Why are we so uncomfortable with our knowledge? We spent all this money and time to get it. So the paradox, too, is we have knowledge about what works and doesn't work to address public health issues, but frequently believe that asserting this knowledge is disempowering. Doesn't make sense. It's not right. If we're going to act second class, we're going to be treated second class. What we have saves lives. Okay? And so community residents know their conditions, their history, their culture, but really they know on their own what works when it comes to solving complex social problems. I work in economic development. Okay, I'm not going to ask somebody who's been unemployed, never had a business, how do you start a business? They're going to want me to do that. They're going to want to know how to start a business. I can't tell them to go. Why should they fail if I know? Why are we setting up to learn by trial by error? Third situation. You're working with a community that has traditionally not had power or influence in their larger municipality. Politicians and agencies have not been responsive to their needs. There's an RFP to fund a coalition between government agencies, nonprofits, businesses, and community leaders. Because of your relationship with the community leaders, they come to you advice on what to do. You can. Suggest they build a coalition and help build their relations. When in doubt, build a coalition, right? B. Suggest organizing the community to demand changes in policies and lack of representation from powerful institutions. Usually something you cannot do in a coalition. Okay? How many people have been in a coalition that had a majority of residents and community leaders? One, two, three. Okay, a few. Okay? How many have been in a majority nonprofits and higher ed education? Okay? A lot more. How can you have a shift in power if the powerful have the votes? Let alone the implicit power. And for those who believe you can do both, that's your option. But often, how long my experience has been, you cannot be at the table while you're fighting them from the outside, especially if you haven't gained the respect. So what's happened over the last several years is that we found the coalition building, while nice, has really been a very good human service public health management tool, but the question of how empowering has it really been, given the fact that most of them, as research shows, are dominated, as you'll hear from the CAPCA and all the different presentations of the coalition, are dominated by powerful institutions with a handful of residents sitting at them. But that's where most of the funding has been going, federal and foundation, for the last couple of years, several, many years. Okay? So paradox three is the greatest social changes arise through conflict due to shifts in power, but we are uncomfortable ourselves with conflict and don't see it as part of what a professional does. Okay? In my opinion, the reason why we opt that way, and there's a real backlash to conflict, both generational as well as professional, okay, is that we are uncomfortable, and so this coalition craze and collaboration, believe me, it has been very, very good to me, collaboration coalitions. Okay? But the point is, when it comes from a point of social change, and not just the lens of social change, but from an actual process, we know historically that change comes through conflict. You cannot talk about a major social change in this society or most anywhere, and you look around the world, it did not come without some sort of conflict with friction. First rule of physics, where there's change, there's heat. Okay? Situation four. How much time do I have? Excellent. I'm almost on time. I'm never on time. I'm temporally impaired, as they call it. Situation four. This is a true situation, okay? We've been working on a project looking at practicing public health leaders from across the country, meeting after meeting, okay? With great passion, they come to the meetings, and among that caution, those meetings, they're asked, what are the causes of health disparities? Focusing on health disparities, the race, gender, sexual orientation, geography, a whole bunch of other issues. Jobs, education, justice and equity, ending oppression and discrimination, unhealthy and violent environments, access to health care. Absolutely. I'd vote for them, okay? So then we ask them, what are their solutions? Their solutions is to improve public knowledge of healthy behaviors and choices, have certified translators, more promodoras, which I'm supportive of all these things, and more funding for community health centers. There's a big disconnect there. Okay? And we go over and over and we ask them, what are the social determinants? What are the social factors? And they come up with, yeah, you know what? We need a media campaign. Or we need, yes, that's right, maybe more. So more money. Okay? Very interesting. So, in these situations, we can look for funding to form a coalition to launch these strategies, right? We've been there. We can pick one of these solutions and implement a program. But social change does not happen through programming. You know, what if the civil rights movement was funded by a foundation and had to fill out this grant? Where would we be right now? We'd all be in the back of the bus. Okay? Either form a coalition or run a program. And again, I think it's important because those demonstrate what is possible. But the numbers aren't there. We're talking scale. We're talking about jobs, education. Okay? You know, something for 50 kids, God bless what happens for those 50 kids, but there are going to be 50,000 in those communities that aren't going to get that because of these structural inequities. We can try to engage the leaders in education, economic development, and other stated social determinants before starting a plan. Often these folks are brought in years later. It's been my experience working on all these collaborations. And they bring in public health late too. So they run from when you have an employment, when you work in the economic development area, they realize health is an issue, and a couple of years later they bring the health people in, education does the same thing. Very rarely does everybody realize that it does really truly take a village from the beginning, and that we have to learn about each other, that we have to develop those relationships before we get started. I wanted a little context, right? So we're talking about these programs, but right now, and we're coming out with figures every day, I did this last week and there's even more statistics on this, that the poverty rate is 15, you know, so you see this information, 15%, and look at the numbers there. Almost over more than one out of five children in America right now are living in the ridiculously low poverty rate. I mean, what kind of program are we going to run to solve that? That's an uphill battle. So, the last paradox, that the major determinants of health are not part of health systems or the responsibility of public health organizations. So as I quote Mark Twain, if your only tool is a hammer, you see all problems as nails. If we only have one set of tools of how to do this, we always come up with one solution. Go back to that chart. Why is it good people, passion, socially right, but their only set of skills was run a program, limited number, educate the public. They did not have that, have the skills to really think about larger other determinants and bring them together. They didn't have the relationships with other areas. So some things to consider in my last few minutes here. Okay, some thoughts. First, we have to start organizing to change our organizations to promote social justice. We generally work in powerful institutions. An amazing project, one of the most effective low-cost projects I ever evaluated and worked on, was called Embedding Prevention, National Crime Prevention Prevention Council, funded just a half-time facilitator for state government employees in six states, just to come together, all those change agents inside state governments in six states, including California, right? And California doesn't change, it changed, just to have them work together to figure out how to pass policies. And there were only about 12, 15 people from different agencies there, but these were these bridge builders. They came together and in 2 years changed more policies than I've seen in coalition building in a long time. Okay, locally. Coming together to change our institutions. Embrace power and conflict and learn how to use them for progressive social change. The conflict's not the problem, our fear of it is. Form partnerships with community leaders where science and community work is okay to work together. Don't be afraid of what we know. It's okay to advise. It's just a respect to have the that our education is okay. Engage and learn about the movements and experts and institutions and economic development things. We have to start learning about these things. There are solutions. Just like we tell people that we meet and we tell our parents, yeah, this is really cool stuff and public health really can make a difference. They're saying the same thing. There's stuff out there in education, economic development, jobs, all these areas that are working too, and we're all working alone in our silos. I think this is really important. I think that for those of us, and professors, mentors, bosses, we have to really prepare our young professionals for the reality. We have made everything, we've made social change a technique. I had a very, very powerful experience just before I went away with one of our staff, went through all the American Evaluation Association fellowships, went through some APHA thing, and she gave a presentation at our company, and she said, I learned all these techniques, but when I came to my first job, I didn't know how to change it because none of it was supported. So I had all these methods of cultural competency empowerment, but I couldn't do it. I didn't tell me about the reality of working in organizations and in institutions and how do you pull these things off. Okay? 1 minute, excellent. Okay. Last, only two bullets. We have to treat community leaders and residents like adults. We have to stop dummying down this stuff. People are capable. I have tremendous respect. I think they can understand jargon. Because they have to. Because to go to a foundation or government agency to get money, or to be able to negotiate with a business, you have to know that language. Highlander Research and Education Center, who many of you know was at the forefront of civil rights issues, taught math and reading and literacy by teaching workers in coal mines how to review the books and the accounting procedures of their businesses so that they can get fair wages. Not by drawing trees, not by making things into pictures and games, but really dealing directly in what adult life does. Okay? I used to go crazy when I see people tell me logic, you know, these words and they have to draw trees and plants and they tell me the words are too big. These are adults. I do respect that they can learn. We can explain what these things mean. And finally, almost finally, treat this work as a matter of life and death, because it is. Our standards have to be raised. Stop apologizing for our work. We do the best work. We do the most important work. Okay, our standards should be higher, and that people deserve, in public health, the highest standards of work. They should know what is working, what is not, and to be able to rise to that occasion, be able to do those things. So lastly, two last quotes. Can't go wrong with these guys, okay? First of all, it starts with us. You must be the change you want to see in the world. And secondly, especially for our times right now, the ultimate measure of a person is not where they stand in moments of comfort and convenience, or in places of comfort and convenience, but where they stand in times of challenge and controversy. Thanks so much.